and welcome to Halfwit History. I'm Jonathan.
And I'm Kylie.
And this is a show where we talk about the upcoming week, but a long time ago.
And sometimes not so long ago. I don't know why you were talking like a robot.
Because we did that for the other podcast, and now my voice wants to do this.
I hate it.
Oh no, I am broken.
That has nothing to do with your voice. You were broken long before that.
Wow. Okay, well, put my broken robot body back into a time machine and take me back to whatever topic we're talking about today.
Oh, dear. Okay, so on May 26th of 1828, a teenage boy appeared in the streets of Nuremberg, Germany, carrying a strange letter.
Ooh, was it about the robot rebellion?
No, it was not.
Was he a time traveler?
Unlikely.
Okay, what's a strange letter?
So it was addressed to the captain of the 4th Squadron of the 6th Cavalry Regiment, Captain von Wessenig. The anonymous author wrote that the boy had been given to him as an infant in 1812, and that he had instructed him in reading, writing, and, of course, the Christian religion, but had never let him step foot outside the house. So he was basically trapped in a house.
Okay, but what about the letter?
We're getting there. The letter stated that the boy would like to be a cavalryman, as his father was, quote unquote, and invited the captain to either take him in or to hang him.
Oh.
So that's cheerful, huh?
Yeah, odd choices for a little boy.
Well, he's a teenager, so not quite a little boy.
Okay, teenager.
But so
now the drama makes a lot more sense.
So there was also a second, shorter letter enclosed, supposedly from the boy's mother, stating that his name was Casper and that he was born on April 20th of 1812 and that his father, a cavalryman of the 6th Regiment, was dead. Suspiciously, though, this letter looked like it was in the same handwriting as the letter from the caretaker, so
it's genetics.
Sure. That's how genetics work. Someone completely unrelated to your family gives you their handwriting style. Yay! So Casper was taken to the house of Captain von Wessenig, where he could repeat only the words, "I want to be a cavalryman, as my father was," and "horse, horse."
Okay.
Yeah, I know.
So, this is really strange.
It's like full sentence. Horse, horse. Like that doesn't make any sense to me that he got one full sentence in that like with like good grammar and everything and then horse. But further demands to talk resulted in tears or the obstinate proclamation of don't know. So he also knew don't know.
It sounds like he didn't know enough to write this letter.
Right. We're going to get into it. There's lots of questions just all around this thing. So he was taken to a police station where he was able to write a name, Casper Hauser. He showed that he was familiar with money and could say some prayers and read a little bit, but he answered few questions and his vocabulary appeared to be pretty limited, apparently to, "I want to be a cavalryman as my father was," "horse," and "don't know."
And the other horse.
Yes. Yep. Horse twice. Yes.
Horse.
Horse, horse. A horse is a horse, of course.
Of course.
So because he provided no account of himself, he was imprisoned as a vagabond and spent the following 2 months in Lugesland Tower in Nuremberg Castle. So no proof of who you are or what you claim to be. Go in the prison. It's fine.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, he has to be either a cavalryman or hanged. And they were like, well, we don't want to hang a kid. So prison.
I mean, arguably better than being hanged. So there's that. So he was reported to be in pretty decent physical condition and had a, quote, healthy facial complexion, but seemed to have had signs of developmental delay or some sort of, like, mental disability.
Really?
Yeah. So at first it was assumed that Hauser was a half-wild child from the forest. However, during the course of many conversations with the mayor of Nuremberg, Mayor Binder, Hauser relayed a very different story of his past life. According to Hauser, for as long as he could remember, he'd spent his life in solitary confinement in a dark cell. He gave the cell's dimensions as approximately 2 meters long, 1 meter wide, and 1.5 meters high, with only a straw bed to sleep on and, for toys, two horses and a dog carved out of wood. So not exactly living in the lap of luxury.
No.
So Hauser continued by claiming that he found rye bread and water next to his bed each morning, but at times the water would taste bitter and drinking it would cause him to fall asleep more deeply than usual.
Poisoning?
Well, drugging.
Yeah.
On those occasions, Hauser would wake up to find that his straw had been changed out and his hair and nails had been cut. He claimed that the first human being he met was a man who visited him not long before he was released, who took great care not to let Hauser see his face. The mystery man taught Hauser how to write his name by leading his hand, and once Hauser learned to stand and walk, he was brought to Nuremberg and just left there.
Hmm.
Apparently with these two letters and the ability to write his name. So this tale aroused a lot of curiosity, obviously, and made Hauser an object of international attention. Rumors arose that he was of princely parentage, but there were also allegations that he was an imposter. Hauser's claims were investigated, led by Paul Johann Anselm Ritter von Fehrbach. Whew, that's a long name.
Yeah, you did that one really well.
Shockingly. The president of the Bavarian Court of Appeals. Although why this guy was the one to do the investigation, I have no idea, because he seems like he would be in a much higher position than someone who just has to carry out a regular investigation. But that's a problem for another time.
Yeah.
So Hauser was formally adopted by the town of Nuremberg, and money was donated for his upkeep and education. He was given into the care of Friedrich Daumer, a schoolmaster and speculative philosopher, who taught him various subjects and discovered his talent for drawing.
Oh.
So he was a little artistic. So by all reports, Hauser did quite well in his environment, even when Daumer tried homeopathic experiments on him.
Uh-oh. Fun. Not good.
Supposedly, Daumer would hold the north pole of a magnet towards him, and Hauser would, quote, put his hand to the pit of his stomach and, drawing his waistcoat in an outward direction, said that it drew him thus, and that a current of air seemed to proceed from him.
What?
So, supposedly some, like, funky, like, hocus-pocusy, like, the magnet made, like, some sort of, like, reaction in his stomach kind of thing. And apparently there was air involved.
I think what that's saying is that he would fart when magnets got near him.
Unless you can fart from your stomach, I don't know.
You can. That's where farts come from.
No, I know, but I mean, like, unless the air from the fart came from his, like, belly button. Maybe he had a fissure.
Maybe he had
a
fissure. Yep. If
anyway.
He was potentially of princely heritage, there were many fissures in the...
That's true.
Or fistulas, not fissures.
That's it. Yeah. Fistula. Yep.
Fissure is an earth term, a geologic term.
Or a fisher cat. But anyway, that's unrelated. So apparently the North Pole magnets caused some weird reaction. South Pole magnets didn't really affect him.
Made him burp.
Nope, just
the other way.
Had no reaction, apparently.
Oh. North pushed to the south, south pushed to the north.
Nope. just one form of reaction, apparently. On October 17th, 1829, Hauser was found in the cellar of Daumer's house, bleeding from a newly cut wound on his forehead. He claimed that while sitting on the privy, he had been attacked and hurt by a hooded man who had threatened him with the words, quote, "You still have to die ere you leave the city of Nuremberg."
Oh.
Also, the privy is the toilet.
I know.
Anyone doesn't know that. Just saying.
We accidentally made a fart joke and then Kylie had one built in, so.
Also, all I could think of was in Game of Thrones, that one dude getting killed on the toilet. And for some reason, I was suddenly implanting that dude's face on this child's body and it made me laugh. I don't know. Anyway.
You're strange.
You don't remember that scene?
I only watched the first season, maybe not even all of it, and the last two episodes of season 7 and then all of season 8 with you.
Okay, fair. So, Hauser claimed that his attacker was the same man who had brought him to Nuremberg. Following his blood trail, investigators determined that he had first fled to the first floor where his bedroom was, but then instead of going to find his caretakers, he had gone downstairs and climbed through a trapdoor into the cellar.
Okay.
Which sort of makes sense. I mean, if you got attacked and you're trying to hide, like, it makes sense that you would, like, go find somewhere to hide, especially if you weren't, like, imminently in danger of, like, bleeding out or something. So I sort of get that. So alarmed by Hauser's story, officials called for a police escort and transferred him to the care of Johann Bitterbach, a municipal authority. This alleged attack also fueled rumors about his possible ancestry from Hungary, England, or the House of Baden. Of course, there were those who doubted that Hauser was attacked at all, speculating that he might have given himself the cut with a razor, which he then took back to his bedroom before going down to the cellar. It was theorized that he might have done this to gain pity as a way to escape getting scolded over a recent quarrel he had had with Dahmer, who had come to believe that the boy had a tendency to lie.
Mm.
On April 3rd of 1830, a pistol went off in Hauser's room at the Bitterbox house. His caretakers rushed into the room and found him bleeding from a wound to the right side of his head. Hauser soon revived and stated that he had climbed on a chair to get some books. The chair had fallen, and then, while trying to find something to grab onto, he had accidentally torn down the pistol hanging on the wall that was, like, decorative, and caused the shot to go off. Unsurprisingly, there are doubts whether the superficial wound was actually caused by a bullet. Some people believe that the incident stems from a recent quarrel in which, again, Hauser had been reproached for lying. Whatever the case, the occurrence led the municipal authorities to come to another decision on Hauser, whose initially good relationship with the Bitterbach family soured. Obviously, he shot a gun off in their house. With Mrs. Bitterbach having commented on his, quote, horrendous mendacity and art of dissimulation. So basically, he was liar and very full of himself.
Yep.
And had at one point called him, quote, full of vanity and spite. So, not super well-liked at this point in that house. So in May of 1830, he was transferred to the house of Baron von Tuscher. But this didn't go much better. The Baron would also later complain about Hauser's penchants for vanity and lies. So luckily for Hauser, who had quickly worn out his welcome in the homes of Nuremberg, a British nobleman, Lord Stanhope, took an interest in him and took custody of Hauser in late 1831. Lord Stanhope proceeded to spend a lot of money trying to clarify Hauser's origin. In particular, he paid for two visits to Hungary, hoping to jog the boy's memory, as Hauser seemed to remember some Hungarian words and had once declared that the Hungarian Countess Matheny was his mother, which there's no way to corroborate that. This probably comes as no surprise to our listeners, but Hauser failed to recognize any buildings or monuments in Hungary, which would be recognizable if you had actually lived there.
Yep.
A Hungarian nobleman who had met Hauser later told Stanhope that he and his son had a good laugh when they recollected the strange boy and his erratic behavior. Predictably, this complete failure caused Stanhope to doubt Hauser's credibility. Shocking. In December 1831, he transferred Hauser to Ansbach in the care of a schoolmaster named Johann Greg Mayer. And in January of 1832, Stanhope left Hauser behind for good. He continued to pay for his upkeep and living expenses, but never fulfilled his promise to take him to England. So now Hauser is in the care of a schoolmaster, which didn't seem to have been the ideal situation for someone like Hauser, who really seemed to crave the spotlight and attention. Schoolmaster Meyer was strict and didn't care for Hauser's tendency to lie and make excuses, and the relationship became strained pretty quickly. So Hauser spent some of 1832 working as a copyist at a local law office, but that ended when his patron died in early 1833. On December 9th, Hauser had a serious argument with Meyer. 5 days later, Hauser came home with a deep wound in his left chest. He claimed that he had been lured to the Ansbach Court Garden, where a stranger stabbed him while giving him a bag. When a policeman investigated the garden, he found a small violet purse containing a penciled note in mirror writing. It read, quote, Hauser will be able to tell you quite precisely how I look and from where I am. To save Hauser the effort, I want to tell you myself from where I come. Then blank. I come from blank, the Bavarian border blank, on the river blank. I will even tell you the name, M-L-O, with the two little dots over it.
Uh-huh.
So Hauser died from his wound on December 17th, 1833. Inconsistencies in Hauser's account led the Ansbach Court of Inquiry to suspect that he had actually stabbed himself and then invented a tale about being attacked. The note in the purse that was found in the court garden contained both a spelling error and a grammatical error, which were very typical for how Hauser wrote. He also had muttered incoherently about writing in pencil on his deathbed. Although Hauser had been eager for the purse to be found, he never asked about its contents. The note itself was folded into a specific triangular form, which, according to Mrs. Meyer, was the same way that Hauser folded his letters. So that's not suspicious or anything.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of similarities, let's say.
Yep.
So later, forensic examiners agreed that the wound could possibly have been self-inflicted. Many authors likewise believe that he actually injured himself, possibly in a bid to revive public interest in his story, or maybe to persuade Stanhope to fulfill his promise to take him to England. But he had accidentally injured himself more deeply than he had planned, causing his own death. A 1928 medical study supported the view that Hauser had self-inflicted the wound and accidentally stabbed himself too deeply. However, a 2005 forensic analysis actually argued that it seemed, quote, unlikely that the stab to the chest was inflicted exclusively for the purpose of self-damage. But both a suicidal stab and a homicidal act cannot be definitely ruled out. So, could go either way, according to this 2005 study. Hauser was buried in the city cemetery of Ansbach, where his headstone reads, in Latin, quote, here lies Caspar Hauser, riddle of his time. His birth was unknown, his death mysterious. 1833.
I want my tombstone to say riddle of my time.
The riddle of my time, of his time.
What an awesome headstone saying.
All right, put it in your will and I'll try and make sure that happens when you die.
Who is he? Oh, it says he was a riddle of his time. Wow.
And then people are going to Google you and be like, who the heck is this?
That's right. And then they'll find all this content. Whee!
Oh, dear. So a monument to him was later erected in the court garden, which reads, quote, here lies a mysterious one who was killed in a mysterious manner, which I find interesting because he was stabbed in the court garden, but he didn't die there and he wasn't buried there either.
Yeah.
So the phrase here lies is completely inaccurate. Yeah. So what was the truth of Caspar Hauser? Well, we'll likely never know. According to Carl Lenhart, a psychiatrist in 1970, it seems highly unlikely that he could have possibly lived in the conditions that he described and still A, be alive to be released from them, or B, have been able to learn to communicate and function as he did. So, like when he was a kid and he claims to have been imprisoned in that dark cell and never released. Yeah. He contended that Caspar Hauser was, as other authors already opined, a pathological swindler. In addition to his hysterical makeup, he probably had the persistence of a paranoid personality since he was able to play his role so imperturbably.
What a word.
I know. That was a quote, so I couldn't change it.
Yep.
So Carl Lenhart claims that he was likely a pathological swindler who had some other sort of personality disorder that he was convinced that this was true, which made him be able to act it so well.
Yeah.
Potentially other problems arising herein as well.
Mm-hmm.
So as for who Caspar Hauser was, there are plenty of theories about that too. According to contemporary rumors, probably as early as 1829, Caspar Hauser was, in fact, the hereditary Prince of Baden, who was born on September 29th of 1812. According to history, and like all written record, the prince died on October 16th, 1812. It was alleged that he had been switched with a dying infant only to subsequently surface 16 years later as Hauser. If that were true, Hauser's parents would have been Charles, the Grand Duke of Baden, and Stephanie de Beauharnais, cousin by marriage and adopted daughter of Napoleon.
Oh, dun, dun, interesting.
Dun. Yeah. So as Charles had no surviving male children, because heaven forbid a female hold the title, his successor was his uncle Louis, who was later succeeded by his half-brother Leopold. Leopold's mother, the Countess of Hochberg, was the alleged culprit for the plot. The Countess supposedly disguised herself as a ghost, the, quote, white lady, who then kidnapped the prince. Her motive, evidently, would have been to secure the succession for her sons, which kind of seems like a lot of risk for not very well laid out stable plan.
Yeah.
Like, that seems like you're taking a lot of risk for not a lot of reward.
Mm-hmm.
So following Hauser's death, some claim that he was murdered, again, to hide his supposed true identity. However, considering Hauser was unmarried and childless at the time of his death, it seems highly unlikely to me that he would have posed any sort of threat.
Yeah, no way.
Yeah. More evidence was uncovered in 1876 to counter this theory when Otto Mittelstadt presented official documents concerning the prince's emergency baptism, autopsy, and burial. In his book, Historical Mysteries, Andrew Lang stated, quote, it is true that the Grand Duchess was too ill to be permitted to see her dead baby in 1812, but the baby's father, grandmother, and aunt, with the 10 court physicians, the nurses, and others, must have seen it in death, and it's too absurd to suppose, on no authority, that they were all parties to the White Lady's plot, end quote.
Yeah, sounds like a lot of witnesses there.
Including, like, his father, grandmother, and aunt. So, like, those three people, at least, would not be, oh yeah, let's go along with this plot to like kidnap the baby and like whatever.
Also, you said like 10 court physicians.
Yep.
Like that's a lot of people to wrangle up and bribe and
yep, not to mention the unnumbered amount of nurses and other people who are all present at a royal birth, because royal births in this time were like almost a public affair.
Yeah, like a spectacle.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So like high-standing officials, physicians, nurses, all those people would have been there. So I have questions. So another historian, Fritz Trotz, went so far as to write that, quote, the silly fairy tale, which to this day moves many pens and has found much belief, was fully disproved in Otto Mittelstadt's book. So another historian is like, there's no way any of this could even remotely be true. And Otto already proved it.
This guy's going to be mad at us for talking about it again.
Probably. I'm pretty sure he's dead, though. So
did lots of talking.
I'm pretty sure he's dead, though, so he really
rolling in his grave.
Other than haunting us.
Yep.
So additionally, letters of the Grand Duke's mother, published in 1951, gave detailed accounts of the child's birth, illness, and death, which would disprove the theory of switched babies. So no baby switched at birth or long-lost princes in Hauser's background. But the mystery still remains, who was he? Well, people are still trying to figure that one out. In November of 1996, the German magazine Der Spiegel reported an attempt to genetically match a blood sample from underwear thought to have been Hauser's. Also unrelated. That seems like a horrible place to get a blood sample
from.
Anyway, so this analysis was made in laboratories of the Forensic Science Service in Birmingham and in the LMU Institute of Legal Medicine at the University of Munich. Comparisons with descendants of the princely family proved that the blood examined could not have come from the hereditary prince of Baden. So, not enough things in common.
Yep.
So he definitely wasn't a prince. But wait, there's more.
Jesus.
In 2002, the Institute for Forensic Medicine of the University of Munster analyzed hair and body cells from locks of hair and items of clothing that had belonged to Kaspar Hauser. From the items, analysts took 6 different DNA samples, all of which turned out to be identical. So all the DNA samples are identical to each other, all coming from one person. All, however, differed substantially from the blood sample examined in the 1996 comparison.
Not the same person.
Not the same person. So the blood from the underwear and the hair and cells from...
presumably actually this person's being and
right.
items.
Are not the same.
Yep.
So is the blood different? Is the blood from a question mark or is the hair and cells from a question mark? We may never know. We may never know. So these new DNA samples were compared to a mitochondrial DNA segment from Astrid von Mettinger, a female line descendant of Caspar's supposed younger sister, Princess Josephine of Baden, through her granddaughter, Princess Josephine Caroline of Belgium. Since mitochondrial DNA passes only through the female line, it can't change except through mutation. So a brother of Josephine should be, if not identical, at least almost identical.
Okay.
Guess what?
Wasn't?
Nope. Sequences were not identical. However, the deviation wasn't large enough to confidently exclude a relationship, as the difference could have been caused by a mutation during the previous generations. On the other hand, though, the relatively high similarity doesn't definitively prove this alleged relationship either, as the Hauser samples show a pattern that is representative of a lot of the German population.
Ah, okay.
So
he's just very commonly German.
Yes. Like that seems to be kind of what it is. He's definitely German. And that's really all we know at this point.
Huh.
So the bad news is we'll likely never know for sure. The House of Baden does not allow any medical examination of the remains of Stephanie de Bernays or the child that was buried as her son in the family vault at the Forsheimer Skolskirk, which I think means church.
Maybe.
So the best DNA to compare Hausers to will likely forever remain out of reach. And that is the mysterious story of Kaspar Hauser, Germany's feral child. And if anyone is really into knowing more, there's also a movie, The Enigma of Kaspar Hauser from 1974.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so you can watch a movie if you're really digging this.
Neat.
Yeah. I imagine it's not a super great done movie because, like, I imagine it was done by some, like, small place, but...
possibly, and it was in the 70s, so...
I also think it might be in German, so you might have to, like, watch it with subtitles, too, so... that's another thing.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, we are going to go to fun facts soon, but we have to do our quick call to action, which is go visit halfwaypodcast.com. That's
yes.
where we keep all of our works. There is actually, if you are a sleuthing kind, a little bit of a puzzle on our homepage currently.
Ooh.
If you wanted to go check that out.
I like puzzles.
Yeah, maybe you could check it out.
I should.
I did this secretly. I didn't tell Kylie.
I know. Johnson's just like, I'm doing things. And I'm like, Okay.
Things are happening.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So thank you to The Fisherman for the use of our theme song, Another Day. You can find a link to their SoundCloud down, pointing down, in our show notes.
Mm-hmm.
And is there anything else? Do we have any other updates? I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Yeah, you can find us on all socials at Halfwit History, all that stuff. Yep. You can find all of our socials on the halfwitpodcast.com.
Yep. So if you want to find us on whatever social media that we may or may not use anymore.
Uh-huh. Taking that from NADPOD now.
Yep.
Find us on the social medias that we may or may not use.
We'll find out. It's fine. Yep. I never use any of them, so.
I use them a lot for voice acting and a little bit for the podcast, too.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I just am really bad at keeping up with anything.
Anytime Kylie's used her Twitter, it's actually been me retweeting our stuff.
Pretty much, yep.
Anyways, now that's enough talking, so we can go to our fun facts and let
yay.
These listeners get on to their day.
Yes.
So, for fun facts, I have on May 25th of 1932, Goofy, a.k.a. Dippy Dog, first appears in Mickey's Review by Walt Disney.
Gorsh. Dippy Dog. Oh, no. Now we're tying back to our other podcast, because you did that the other day.
I did. I also mentioned the little puzzle on our other podcast when we recorded it yesterday.
Just as awful then as it was now.
Of course.
Oh, no, I hate it.
What's your fun fact, Kylie? Oh, no, I'm getting dead stared, evil-eyed.
This might be the last episode, folks.
Oh, no. Save
kidding.
Me.
I'm
Save
kidding.
Me. That's what the puzzle is on the homepage of our
just
website.
Jonathan's
is
SOS.
SOS, SOS.
He did the Goofy voice too much, and I finally snapped. Anyway. So my fun fact is that on May 22nd, 1849, Abraham Lincoln received a patent, and he's the only U.S. president to have gotten a patent, and it was for a device to lift a boat over shoals and other obstructions.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. I was like, that's actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's very neat. I'm like, all right, cool, dude. Good job.
I like that. I like that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you all for listening. We hope you've enjoyed your time with us learning about this crazy feral child. And as always, I've been your halfwit.
And I'm your historian.
And we hope you listen next time.
Bye.